This is a special edition of Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting. I am your host, DJ Impact. And today, I don't have the rest of the bad boys with me because we wanted this show to specifically concentrate on the interview that we had with RVD. He talked to us about his documentary, which is called Headstrong. You can rent or purchase this on most of your media platforms, like your Apple devices or Amazon Prime. And it was very interesting just listening to how this documentary started off one way with it becoming a comedy tour and ended up being something else. An issue that many talent or those that's in the sports related industry sometimes have to deal with. And this documentary completely changes from what we were expecting to be to what it is. So it's good just to travel through this 1 hour of RVD, someone who all of us have respected, who have loved, who have enjoyed and been entertained by in the ring for so long. So we want you to get a chance to listen to him talk a little bit about this documentary. And then when he's finished, go watch it if you haven't watched it yet. It doesn't cost you much. If you spend $9.99 on the network, this is even less than that if you choose to rent it, and about the same price if you chose to purchase it. We thank all of you again for listening to Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting and subscribing, as we have many more guests coming on. Now let's introduce to you the interview with RVD, which was pre-recorded a week just before the pay-per-view United We Stand. So let's now get to the interview we had with RVD. This is another edition of Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting, and I have the bad boys here with me. Simon Street, how you doing?
What's up, everybody? How you doing today?
Good, good. King Lucky, how are you?
I'm great.
And Matt Michaels, how are you?
Ready to get a van terminated.
Exactly. It's an exciting day. We get to interview someone who created a new movie, which is called Headstrong. And you can download it today on just your media platforms, like such as iTunes. It's an awesome movie. We're here to talk to him all about it today. Let's give it up for Rob Van Dam.
Yes. Woo!
Yeah. Oh, man. Snap, you guys got RVD on your show?
This is the highlight.
Yeah.
And for the purpose of this show, I would like to be referred to as the Battle Creek Bad Boy.
The RVD. Battle Creek, the Battle Bad, Creek Boy. Bad Boys. I love it. That's awesome. Perfect.
So it's an official Bad Boy convention conversation.
Cool. So, hey, good to see you. Good to hear you guys. And I'm doing excellent. First question is always, hey, Rob, how are you doing? Doing excellent. We can move on right there.
Making our jobs easier, isn't he?
We'll jump right into it. I know the documentary came about, is it true, through you meeting up with Tom Garland, who is also a comic and is a fan. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. I've done a few tours with Tom, you know, and I stand-up comedy is something I do sometimes, but I don't do it a lot. Sometimes I'll do it. Could be, you know, 3, 4, 5 times in a month, and then it might be 6, 7, 8 months that I don't do it. It just, everything just kind of comes around. So I've been doing that for years. And, Tom has set up a few tours, 3 or 4 tours where we go across the country and hit a bunch of clubs and then put a bunch of shows together. And then, you know, it's worth it. It's worth it big picture wise on the business end for me, and it's fun. It's not something that I'm like looking to do full time. I don't really want to do anything full time because I'm a homebody, and I've worked hard to not work hard.
That makes sense. Yeah. And So you have this, you know, comedy tour lined up, and for those people who have seen the documentary, you wrestle a couple days before you're going out on tour. And did you know right away when you took the bump in the ring that you had a concussion due to the fact that you've had so many in the past?
Yes, right away I knew, and I didn't care. You know, it was just something that that is part of the job that happens a lot of times. A lot of people don't know where to draw the lines on what's a concussion and what's not. And that's something that, of course, we learn in this movie. It's on hand, live as it's happening, educating. So, you know, I bring, as you guys saw, I bring the camera with me so that everybody is learning as I'm learning about, you know, some serious concerns that went on at the time. Yeah, I smacked the back of my head. It wasn't even a hard smack at right. all. But it knocked my my vision a little silly, and I had double vision. And this is something that seriously has happened hundreds of times without exaggeration. And usually I just shake my head and then just continue the match, which I did do. But the double vision, you know, kept having me thinking night after night that it was just, I was going to wake up and be fine. I'm sure it'll go away. And I'm not expecting it to alter the plans of making this documentary, which the intention of the documentary was just like, hey, let's bring the camera 7 days on the road doing stand-up comedy. We're going to hit this wrestling convention. Get a behind-the-scenes look. I want to share my life. I want everyone to know how cool it is to be RVD and
yeah.
see what it's like to be me and get love everywhere. But, yeah, as you see, the whole intended content changes as the symptoms don't go away. And I try to tell the story just the way it happened to me, you know, with the, you know, thinking we're doing one thing and then everything changes and it ends up being about something else.
Rob, I got a question for you. So during the documentary, you mentioned that you've had hundreds of concussions. Is there one before this one that made you say, like, well, maybe I should hang it up and hang my boots up?
No, I never really had much concern. I mean, I was interested. It's a relatively new study. Looking at the brain and the studying the long terms, because we don't really have that many long term cases. And so what I found out is that the whole education is new, and it's still, you know, getting resistance as far as being accepted by the sports and by football coaches and such.
Right.
I don't think I had any concussion that I would consider major. I had one, and it was before I was even in the business, where I was knocked out and I couldn't retain memory like for a couple of days. And I've only had that happen one time in all my 30 years of wrestling, where I knocked myself out. And afterwards, this was an impact when I was wrestling Kenny King, and I believe I lost the X Division title or whatever the hell I had. And instead of doing the frog splash, like at the last minute, I was just like, hey, you know what? I think I'll do a 450. I haven't done that in 10 years. And I did it, but my face hit the mat so hard.
Oof, oh.
I was just spaghetti-legged on camera, like probably looking like I'm really overselling it, but I couldn't find up. I couldn't get up to my feet. And afterwards, I'm in the dressing room a while later, and Dixie Carter says, how are you feeling? I said, I feel great. I'm fine. I said, but I can't remember the last, like, half of my match. She said, go see a doctor. I said, I will. She said, no, right now. Go see the doctors right now. And so, you know, I'm like, oh, that's right. They take this serious now, you know. So I went over to the doctor, and the doctor says, how are you feeling? I said, fine. I just can't remember the last half of the match. And the doctor looked at me and goes, you do remember telling me that like 5 minutes ago, right?
Oh, man. I know.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And so, but even then I didn't think I was doing anything permanent, you know. I mean, I had, you know, with the hundreds and hundreds of concussions, I've always thought I was exceptional in that status, because most of my peers tell me that they do have long-term damage, which isn't the same thing as CTE, which we find out in the movie also. But, right. You know, most of my friends say they get headaches or they see stars during the daytime or they just get tired or they trail off when they're talking. And I've had plenty of conversations with other wrestlers, and I always thought I was lucky. I was genetically, you know, gifted with more durability, or maybe it was the THC levels in my brain, which I started I was way ahead of the game there, because now they're actually trying to make neurological protectants, you know, from the THC to give to like football players and stuff. And it turns out that I was onto something. But
yep.
Anyway,
true.
Never rocked me like this one. I just kept thinking every night, I'll be fine tomorrow. I'll be fine tomorrow, and I'll be damned if I didn't have double vision the next day.
At the so let me ask you, at the end of the documentary, it says everything is okay with you. How are you still doing okay now?
Yeah, I am still doing okay. And I mean, I still wrestle, you know, sometimes. I still do everything that I ever did, just don't want to as much anymore. But the doctors, you know, had told me, like, because the studies are so new, it could take years. As long as it's getting better and better, it could take years, then all of a sudden one day, boom, I could be fine, you know, and like vision therapy all through it, and then all of a sudden, like, not needed anymore. So
right.
So I learned right away by asking questions that they really didn't know what to expect.
Awesome. And so being out on the road, you know Tom Garland and Joe Clark's the director, and you got the crew, you know, a small crew. You kind of see it a little bit in the film, but how concerned were people getting knowing that, you know, it's not even the aspect of the shows itself or doing the documentary, but just general concern for you as a person? Were, you know, was this something that they hadn't really had any experience with, I assume, before? Was this like, you know, just listen to Rob and we'll just kind of follow his lead? Or was it like, dude, you need to kind of get some help?
It would be more like the first, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I am the boss, and so I'm not going to, you know, I'm in direction of my own time and what I'm going to do with it. You know, I really didn't tell anybody, as far as like none of the fans. You'll see in this movie, I'm doing stand-up comedy, and then I'm taking pictures with the fans afterwards and, you know, having conversation. And then sometimes I look at the camera and I'm like, I see double right now, and these fans have no idea. Because,
yeah.
You know, I didn't want it to take away from their experience, and I really didn't think that the experience was going to last long enough to be a big factor anyway. But it ended up being a big factor in my life, which is why the movie follows me after the tour to come back to California and to get all checked out and everything. So the movie became much bigger and encompassed a lot more of my life. But, you know, I'm really glad that we caught it all as it was happening.
I've always wondered this with concussions and, you know, having experience that you have with concussions. Is then flying on the airplanes, is that a dangerous thing to do when you do have some kind of concussion? Are you taking a chance?
That is an excellent question, and I believe that there is something to that. And I didn't fly right away, and I did get cleared with the doctor before I did fly. So I think that there is something, and I don't know the science of it, if it's the pressure.
Right.
But I've always thought that for years. I've watched my water bottle crinkle up in the air, and I said,
yeah,
that can't be too good for my brain. Yeah.
Yeah. And then in terms of that, what do you think is the impact of those words? And you said this in the film, your dad said, when you wanted to become a wrestler, you know, don't have it ruin your vision. And then your dad, you know, passing soon around this time that, you know, we're dealing with in the film. Was that something that stood out to you and kind of made you go, okay, maybe I should take this a little more serious because the vision is not clearing up?
Well, I mean, I eventually had no choice but to take it a little more seriously because I couldn't see right. And so that really And plus, I did have some other symptoms too, by the way, as far as like, mostly it was just my vision, but it threw me so far off my game. Like after that tour, the next 3 weeks, I spent making and missing one appointment after another, trying to get to see the doctors and the vision therapist and trying to get a neurologist, you know, where I could get a CT scan, talking to Chris Nowinski on the phone, you know, having him line up appointments for me too. And I just kept missing appointments wow. And I was just like, it was very frustrating for me because I was just knocked so far off my game and everything was so much more difficult to do. You know, because I had to close one eye in order to see or see fine. So yeah, it was, you know, I had no choice but to take it seriously because I got a point where I was like, okay, I need to get my eyes right.
So Rob, you know, in addition to obviously the documentary success and everything, you know, is there anything that you're doing to kind of reach out and to kind of broaden the horizons of other people with regards to concussions?
Well, you know, I've always been on board with the program and the educating. You know, I went to the school in L.A. and we talked to with Chris Nowinski and Billy Corrigan, and we went and tried to talk to the football coaches at UCLA to try to educate them, and they were resisting. You know, they were like, because they're old school. You know what I mean? Like we grew up with things a lot rougher than they are now, and so there's a lot of resistance to it. But I've always been there. You know, I donated my brain and spine way back, like 2007 or 2008, and so I've always done some as far as like encouraging the awareness of it. Right now, I mean, it's this movie that is reaching a lot of people. I got off an elevator the other day, and this dude was like, "Oh my God, RVD!" He goes, "I just watched your movie." He goes, "I heard you talking. I heard you on the radio promoting it, and so I got it because I've had 14 concussions myself. Man, ooh, I used to play hockey, and that's like a common link. Like people that are wrestlers and people that are not wrestlers. The number one feedback I get from people is that they like the movie because they had no idea that I could relate to them because I'm an actual human being that has to overcome the obstacles that life throws at me. And this is how I do it. And I'm sharing and showing this is how I do it and keep my cool and try to not let it change me.
So Rob, I got a question for you. Some of the things that you mentioned in the film with the concussions about how you didn't want to disclose it because you'd still want to work and earn a living. Are you happy now that a lot of the organizations are putting steps in place, you know, to kind of combat that?
I am. You know, I don't think that. I mean, I think it's a good thing. You know, I don't personally feel like I have to interject myself into changing the laws out there. Now Chris Nowinski is doing it, you know. Right. I mean, he's stopping kids that are playing football from doing head shots, and he's making changes in soccer, and I think that's great, and he's like a hero to me. And I look up to Chris Nowinski. Personally, you know, I'm always willing to help when somebody wants my help, but I don't feel like it's my responsibility necessarily to take it upon myself to go out there and change the world to make it softer, you know. But right. it definitely does seem like a good thing.
Yeah. So this film, you had the experience of being an executive producer, and I know when I talked to you a little bit, the idea that I really liked to hear about was what it was like for you being in a room doing a cut of the film with someone who is a director who went to film school and you who have this instinct for telling the story, because I think your instincts were right because the story was a damn good story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. It was quite an adventure. In fact, Joe Clark and I are, we're probably going to write a book on the experience of it, just to share what it was like with us going through it. But, there were several falling outs, At one point, we weren't going to work together anymore. I was trying to get all the footage from him and tell him I would edit it myself. And there was weeks where we wouldn't talk to each other. And I drove him crazy. I drove him crazy because of what you said. You know, he has this education, so he thinks that he's doing everything by the book, and that's how it should be done. And I'm trying to explain to him how I know energy.
Right.
I may not know the film, but I know the energy, and we got to bring the energy up here. You know, it's got to come down. So we worked really hard on it for most of like 2 years, just editing it. And we were both instrumental in everything. Like either one of us can claim that we were responsible for putting the whole thing together, because frame by frame by frame, I was editing over his shoulder. Everything from, you know, start the music, you know, 1 second earlier, you know, you need to fade out here.
Right.
And I did enjoy it. But that is overlooked. People don't understand really or think about how hard it is to actually make a movie. But the one of the purposes of this movie, and I say it on there, is, you know, I do wrestling. I do stand-up comedy. I feel like I can do anything that I want to do. And then by making this movie to say that, I actually also proved that I can make a movie.
Yep.
And that's pretty cool, too. So I'm proud of that, even though most people don't think of, attributing that, you know, to me. But it was really just me and Joe, and that's a pretty small crew.
Yeah. And how many hours of footage did you guys end up having, roughly, to go through?
I don't know if I ever saw a total of it, but it was a lot. It was a lot. And the first rough cut was like a complete different movie than what we ended up with. A complete different story, different things were happening, and it was longer. There was a lot of fan footage, and you know, we went through it over and over so many times that I think Joe was like ready to pack up and like move out of town. He would. A few times he actually made me write down on paper, after this edit, the movie is completely done, which it wasn't. I come back to him next week with a little list of like 3 or 4 things that we have to change. But every little change made it so much better. And, you know, I just had to get it right.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And with that, do you have a newfound respect, too, with... that idea when you know a lot of times fans go to see movies and you see something that is, you know, put out 1.5-2 hours, and then 5 months later when the DVD comes out, you get the director's cut, and it's a totally different film, and some people like that film better. Do you now understand and kind of empathize the situation, you know, filmmakers have to go through in that process to, you know, find a narrative through all the footage that you have, and you can have one completely different film, and then you have something, like you said, that comes out with, you know, this story that it is now, and it's, you know, it's wonderful.
Well, yes, I do have respect for that, and because the content and intentions of what we were doing changed, that also changed a lot of our planning of the movie itself. You know, right off the bat, Joe wanted to know exactly how long the movie's going to be so that we can have distribution in mind. What are we going to do with it? And I was the opposite. I was like, whoa, well, let's see what we got first. Let's put this thing together and then see where it goes. So we really had to do a lot of compromising. And I'm used to just being in charge, because I've edited all my, like, RVD TV episodes. I used to have that's right. Still on my YouTube channel. But I used to spend a lot of time editing those. And not being trained, but, you know, I could use iMovie. I couldn't use all the software. But,
right.
But yeah, actual movie, that's a pretty big deal. And I have wanted to do that for a while, and I do have other ideas in mind. But I usually do look at it not as a fan, but more as a creator. When I'm watching television, quite often I'm thinking of the camera angles that they're using and watching the actors, you know, like stay within the frame without walking off and things of that nature that most people watching aren't thinking of.
Right.
Now that you've gotten behind the camera a little bit, is this something that you want to do more, or would you want to be a little bit more in front of the camera now that you're kind of winding it down a little bit for wrestling?
Yeah, you know, I'm an opportunist, and I'm really not trying to do anything, and I find that people can't relate to that when I'm talking to them. They always want to feel like I got to be doing something, got to be trying to do something, and then if I'm not doing it, then it comes across like maybe I'm failing, but in reality, you know, I prefer a day off to a day on, and yeah. And I've been working for years and years towards doing less and making it mean more. So, good business is good business. So when that happens, then I'm definitely worth considering it. But otherwise. Otherwise, it's just an interest, and I have lots of interest. But yeah, I even have other documentary projects. I was working on one for months and months before this one actually came aboard and completely like knocked that one off the table. And I don't know if I'll get back to it or not. That's part of production too. Is a lot of times a lot of ideas never actually get off the board. Or I have scripts that are written, like half scripts written from 10 years ago that I may or may not pick up again. And I guess I enjoy creating. So aside from that, then we'll see what happens.
So Rob, there's one thing that really struck a chord with me when I was watching the movie, and it's something that you had said that you and I'll paraphrase it, that you're at your most happiest when you're able to be creative. And that's something that stood out for me because, you had talked also in the film about your energy and how, you want to put your energy in towards things that you enjoy doing. What are some things would you suggest for people who are kind of, starting to scratch the surface in their life that are kind of realizing, I enjoy doing this. I'm conscious of what my energy is, good or bad, and I want to fluctuate it or do it. What would you suggest to those people who are just now reflecting on what their energy is and what they put out in the world?
I would say that there's a good book I'd recommend called The Celestine Prophecy. And The Celestine Prophecy is a fictional story, but it's based on real, actual insights that like-minded spiritual people can appreciate. And the book was such a success that there was a couple of sequels to it, and then there was nonfiction study guides where you study the principles that you learn in this this book. It's been a movie too, but the movie's horrible. I wouldn't recommend that.
read the book.
way back in, this was probably like 2006, I think, probably when I picked up The Celestine Prophecy, it really changed my life. And so many people that I talked to afterwards that have read the book said the same thing. The book is about 9 insights towards spiritual ascension. And you learn them throughout the story, insight number 1, insight number 2. But these are things that are real that happen in the story. And it tells you how to tell if you're on the right track or not by feeling your energy and by studying the synchronicities that life has for you. And that has a lot to do with it. And I've always used that system since then. And when synchronicities happen, like you're just talking about Tommy Dreamer. For some random reason, you turn the TV on and Tommy Dreamer's on. Like, whoa, what are the odds of that? I don't believe in coincidences. And I started studying that, and I started being able to peel back those synchronicities like an onion, like layer after layer, and trying to figure out what caused that. And was that already happening? Sometimes you're talking about someone and the phone rings and it's them. It's like, did you manifest them calling, or were they already calling and you felt the vibrations coming to you? And so that's like a whole, chicken or the egg, what happens first? But it's an amazing study, and I use that, and I know when I'm plugged in to the universe's energy and when I'm unplugged. When I'm unplugged, I'm feeling negative energy. It could be anxious, could be worried, could be, very angry. I could just be not feeling good, but you can't feel good and be plugged in. And so the synchronicities don't happen, and then you're off track. And so for me, it's just a quick move to get myself right back on track.
Awesome.
Rob, watching the documentary, one thing that was very awesome to me was some of the jokes that you were telling. And the one that I loved was the one you told about the husband and wife. I just thought that was just so funny. It was amazing.
Shit myself.
If you could tell that one just for somebody that hasn't seen it yet, I think it would be awesome.
That was my friend was arguing with his wife right in front of me. It was like really embarrassing. Like I wasn't even there. She was screaming at him. She said, "Do you realize it's been over 6 months since we've had sex?" He said, "Hey, speak for yourself."
I love that one.
Nice.
And along those lines, I want to ask you, you know, as you go through this and you've been through many a towns, was there a favorite town that you had while you were out eating Cracker Barrel that maybe you really enjoyed more than the next when you were doing this tour?
I guess maybe New York City might have been, you know, one of the highlights of the tour there. You know, I've always liked going to the big cities, you know.
Lots of energy.
Los Angeles, New York City, Miami, yes. So had a blast there in New York City, and as you can see, I get a lot of love there, just like everywhere I go. But it's special. The love in New York City is, like, really special. Like, I feel like they, like, I don't know, like they take me in as one of their own just from the ECW days, even though I didn't grow up there or even live there. But, I mean, like, the garbage truck will go by, and they'll be, like, waving and honking at me, the UPS
truck. That's awesome.
It's extra special in New York City.
I tell you, I'm going there this upcoming week for, no surprise, WrestleMania. Yeah, exactly. is there a place you could recommend in Manhattan for some great food?
Is there a place you can think of to recommend in Manhattan, baby, to eat? I don't know if I have a favorite place. Like, I have fun when I'm in New York City, but food, good food, usually isn't a very big part of it. You know, I'm usually roaming around Times Square and trying to find something that's still open and kind of compromising if I have anything in mind. I don't really have a, yeah.
So,
yeah, so, unfortunately, that's the that, I, better. My recommendation is to ask somebody else.
So, Rob, the one thing that I, another good point, I probably have a couple of them about the movie that I love, but one good thing that you said was you had talked to, you know, a good great length of your girlfriend, Katie. And I thought it was great how you put it as, you know, she is my gift for everything that I went through. First of all, I want to say, like that was, that really touched my heart hearing that. Like, that was really just so sincere, and I felt the energy from that. Can you talk about, you know, if you feel like it, the ways that, that she's been able to hold you down and kind of, you know, go on this journey with you?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, like, whereas life used to be so much work and such a struggle, it's now, like, easy, you know? So, like, I had a long-term marriage, and it was going downhill for, like, the last 10 years that finally ended in a divorce. But at the time, I didn't want the divorce to happen. You know, I would have stayed loyal just to be complacent. But now that I am away from that and with Katie, it's like life is so much better that I realized I would have, now if I knew what I knew now, I would have given, you know, my left hand to be able to move on instead of trying to keep that from happening. But it was, you know, there was so much unnecessary struggle. Things would be difficult where it should be easy. You know, you're just home. You're trying to relax. You're not trying to fight. And there was so much. And then right away, like, I have a quality about myself where I feel, maybe it's because I feel like I've accomplished so much, and the people, you know, have their own fantastic images in their mind of me, but I'm quick to point out my flaws and faults. And when I met Katie, I was like at the bottom of the bottom of my horrible, like the deep depression, as I mentioned in the movie, you know, after the divorce and my dog died and my dad died. And I was just like, rock bottom is definitely a good way to put it. And that's right when I met Katie. And I was just trying to tell her why she should run the other way. Yeah, I mean, you know, you feel worthless when you're like, I didn't feel like I had anything to offer anybody except misery, you know. But she, everything, you know, that I said, like, she understood, and she wanted, and she, you know, she enjoyed my company and hung in there. And our very first date was like a day date that turned into, you know, like all evening. She ended up... after the date, she ended up, was it 12 hours early? So that ended up being, we were together like 12 hours. And it was just, it was like right away, I felt like she knew me and understood me more than anybody else. And with someone that really understands you and your values and really, really knows you, and that person loves you and thinks you're the most amazing person and the best person for that person, you know, on the planet, that's just incredible. I wish everybody, you know, could find that happiness, because everything was like misunderstood before. And I feel like, you know, a lot of people don't know me. You guys don't know what RVD thinks when he sees a hot air balloon. You know what
right,
I mean?
Like, right. Yeah.
And that's the thing about being an image, is people fill in the blanks themselves. They can say, oh, I bet RPD got a sweet pickup truck, and I bet he goes hunting and shooting at deer. He's so cool. People can imagine, like, whatever they want. But even when I was married, like, I felt, like, so misunderstood, because it would be like I could say good morning, and it'd be like, I know you're trying to start a fight. And I'd be like, whoa, what the heck? How'd you get hit out of that? And so, yeah, that was amazing. And our values were such a good match that we're just always have been and still are so happy to be around each other. And that was 3 years ago from tomorrow that we met.
Oh, awesome. Wow.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Happy anniversary, I guess.
Rob, one of the things in watching the documentary that hit home for me is you had a collection of your action figures on the wall that I thought was so cool, because I actually collect. Is there anything that you collect beside your own action figures, or is that just like, you know, you typically get the action figures sent to you, and so you hang them up after it's all said and done?
No, I actually have always been a collector. Now, just recently, you know, after going through the big dragging my face on the bottom of the pit for the time period we were just talking about, you know, I felt like I almost had to, I don't know, rebuild myself, and like some of my priorities changed. So like ever since I was like 6 or 7 years old, I collected Ghost Rider. Every awesome. Single cameo. Every cameo, if he was in an X-Men or a Fantastic Four, I would go out and buy it. Everything. And I had two display cases of every statue. Now, all of a sudden, like, I just didn't care anymore. It's like, okay, I'm moving on in life to a new chapter, and I didn't need that. Collected comic books and other action figures, but all that stuff, you know, I can do without now, too. But I probably still am a collector at heart. I have a ridiculous collection of mobster books.
Wow.
Yeah, but that's kind of my go-to, and has been for a while. I'm a bit of a history buff, but in certain areas. Like I started when I was making the movie Wrong Side of Town in 2009. I really got into Hollywood history because we were filming at Sunset Gower Studios, which had a lot of history.
Yeah,
so I really started. The geek inside me started soaking up like all the information about all the studios that. Where they were and who ran them, and you know, the whole 1923 when they built the Hollywood sign, and that William Mulholland built the day, all this. And but then that Bugsy Siegel was part of Los Angeles history, and so my interest kind of went into mobster history and followed him over to Vegas. And you know, I particularly prefer nonfiction, because you know, the more you read, the deeper it gets, because it's all connected. But yeah, I would say I collect it more in my head, though.
Okay. One of the things I saw on the floor I was glad to see was the yin and the yang mat that you had there. That was really awesome.
Yes, that I'm always about balance. That never changes. You got to have balance no matter what you're talking about.
So he had to get his yin and his yang in, but we were right on the topic. Have you been to the Mob Museum here in Vegas?
Several times, yes.
Isn't it just fantastic?
I love it. It used to not get any business. When I would go there, there would be like maybe three other groups of people.
Yep.
It's a big building. I used to wait in the gift shop for people because that's where they would exit. And I would act kind of like I worked there. I wouldn't say that I worked there, but I would just ask them, like, you know, what their favorite parts were, you know, where they're from, and start talking to them and stuff, just because there's not very many people that can talk to me on my level because I read so much and watch and rewatch so many documentaries. As a matter of fact, I went to the musical A Mob Story in,
wow.
At the Plaza. And Michael Franzese is now one of my new friends, and he lets me ask him anything.
Nice.
Awesome.
And with that history, you know, passion of yours, do you find yourself, you know, thinking of maybe that's something that you'll maybe invest some of your time into because you like to be creative? Could you see yourself doing something involving, you know, a part of history you might be interested in?
I don't know. It could happen, but I kind of hope not, because a lot of times I think that when I have something that I actually really enjoy and it's a pleasure, a lot of times I think I end up, you know, trying to profit on it, and then it makes it less of a pleasure and more business. I think the reason that I'm so fascinated with the whole mobster genre is because they're so opposite from me.
Right.
You know, if I hit a squirrel with my car, it would totally ruin my day.
Yeah.
I mean, I would, like, I'd get out of the car and I'd try to save it, you know, and these guys will put a gun in the, you know, to the back of their brother's head and blow it, you know, blow it off. And it's just amazing to me how that's part of their business, and, you know, so it's pretty fascinating. But I don't, like, look up to them like they're not. Even though I think the mobster genre is what comic books were for me as a kid, I don't look up to these guys
right.
as superheroes, and I'm not going to start collecting artifacts, you know, that are that are really theirs.
Yeah, I'm a huge mob buff as well, too, Rob. And if you had a favorite mob movie that you would just say is your all-time, what would it be?
Casino.
Oh, yeah. They were right there.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to the next one, the Netflix.
The Irishman. Yeah, that's going to be very good.
Cool. Yeah, it was a great book, and it's going to be a great movie for sure.
Oh, yeah.
So one of the things I pulled from the film that I really liked in terms of something that's along the lines of the stand-up is Tom's saying about knowing someone's jokes is like knowing someone's thought process. And that's very revealing, because mm-hmm. anyone who's done stand-up knows that that's basically nailing it on the head.
Yep. I loved it. And when he said that, I was just like, a light bulb went off.
Yeah.
Above my head, and I'm like, that's what I'm doing. Like, I'm sharing my thoughts and perspective, and people are getting to know my thought process, or process of thought, as Yoda says.
Right. Yeah.
That's right.
And does that, you know, when you've done something in entertainment for so long, in terms of, you know, wrestling, you're basically, you know, you have some creative control. But you develop a character, and in certain cases you're going to have writers and whatnot. But when you go out on stage and it's just you, the microphone, and then the audience, does that give you that adrenaline thrill that's a little different because of that fact that you're now revealing basically who you are to these people, and they're either going to love it, hate it, or at the worst point, just be indifferent about it? Is that something that just gives you that thrill of doing it every once in a while?
It's similar but way different too. I wouldn't say that I get the like the same adrenaline rush. You know, I probably would if I was walking out on a stage in Madison Square Garden with 20,000 people.
Right.
You know, I've never done that. But there is still the pressure of wanting to not screw up and I'm thinking before, especially on the first night, if I haven't done it in a long time, I'm thinking, you know, I hope that I remember to say all the stuff that I want to say, which I never do, and that makes it, you know, then the next day it's always like, oh, let me try and, you know, say some stuff I didn't say last night, and a lot of new stuff just comes to you, you know, and it's fun and it gets my creative juices flowing. And then after doing stand-up, my brain is just like, it's working. Like the next day I got a pen and paper out and I'm writing, you know, some new jokes or new ways to tweak something that I said, but also I'm thinking of other stuff, t-shirt ideas. I'm thinking of other business things. I'm thinking of website promotion. It puts my brain in a productive status, you know, which is really conducive towards getting a lot of stuff done. And I don't get in that from wrestling. I don't.
Right.
You know, it's like, you like my Rolling Thunder? Okay, cool. I'm glad you
did. Right.
And it's fun. It's a thrill when I'm out there and I'm showing off. And I also do feel like when I'm on stage doing comedy, I kind of feel like I'm showing off too, because the people are going to have no idea how intelligent I am. And I feel like I'm showing that off. And I feel like super comfortable when I'm on stage because I don't feel like there's anything in jeopardy. And I don't get heckled, you know, and I don't bomb. And if comedians say you're not a real comedian unless you bombed, then that's fine. I don't want to insult the traditional comedian.
Right.
But I just do me.
That's awesome. Hey, one of the things I really found refreshing on the documentary was the conventions and how much love you got through going to those and the respect from your peers. For you, do you see in the near future the opportunity that you could be inducted into the Hall of Fame?
Well, I have no idea. I mean, I know it's a possibility. That's all I can tell you.
I can tell you. You definitely deserve it.
Well, I appreciate that. I don't know exactly what criteria is used to decide that, but it's a lot more than just what the fans think. As far as what wrestlers deserve it, you know, it's got to coincide with some stuff that they have in mind for promoting other ventures also or whatever. But that would be cool, though. It would be an honor, of course.
Yeah.
So, Rob, you know, one thing that you talked about now in the movie, but also, too, I remember I ran into you and you had a little friend with you on a leash. Can you tell us more about your dog? Because I'm a huge dog lover and I tried looking up what the name of your dog is or whatnot. Could you tell us?
She's I'm actually petting her right now. Petri is a Boston Terrier. Yeah, Boston Terrier. She's a great dog. And she came with Katie. They were a package deal.
That's awesome.
And so I'm extra grateful because Katie's not around and she's on the road in India or something, then at least she leaves a little bit of her behind with Petrie and we get along great. I'm home a lot by design. You know, I enjoy being home as opposed to traveling. And so it's awesome to be home and be the housewife and support her while she goes out. And, you know, she travels a lot more than I do. But then I still do it, and stuff is picking up. You guys will hear over the next couple of weeks some announcements, you know. But again, good business is good business, you know.
Right, definitely.
By the way, before we move on, the dog's name is Petrie.
Petrie.
People my age say, you mean like Petri dish? People that are a little bit younger. And then people that are a little bit younger say, oh, Petrie, like the pterodactyl in The Land Before Time.
Yeah. So either or, yeah. So was it named more after The Land Before Time or the actual Petri dish? I'm assuming Land Before Time.
She was the cartoon character.
Yeah.
But by the way, in the movie, she makes a quick little appearance in the movie. And what's great is I took her with me to Hollywood Boulevard, and I didn't have a leash. So I took my belt. I took my belt, and I tied it in a knot around her.
Awesome.
Next time you watch the movie, if you watch it again, if you see that scene with her, you'll see that that's clearly a belt tied in a knot, not a collar. So, I guess I had the leash. I had the leash and not the collar. That must have been it.
That's awesome. Rob, I want to ask you a wrestling question. You've had some spectacular matches through the years. If there was one person that you saw right now, you turn on the TV and you're like, wow, I'd love to have a match with that person, who would it be?
Mark Carano. Mark Carano. Office
yeah?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Shoot fight.
Hey, this has been fun, and I really appreciate you guys helping me get the word out. But we should wrap it up pretty soon.
Definitely
going to the cannabis awards at the Hard Rock.
Oh
awesome.
Right on.
Yeah,
awesome. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, nice. DJ, if you want to throw one final question out there,
sure, I'll throw it up. Rob, you have a match coming up this week. How ready are you for that? You and Sabu versus the Lucha Bros.
Yeah, dude, I've been getting ready. It's like my schedule. The last like 3 years, I've had like 10 to 12 matches a year, and this one, this year, you know, it looks like it might be a little bit more than that. But I can pretty much chill like an off season athlete, which means I'll still work out, but not as intensely. It's not all necessarily my number one priority when I have a bunch of other stuff to do. But then when I have a match, you know, for at least a month before the match, I'm hitting it hard. And so I've been training in every way that RVD does to prepare himself. So I'm ready to hear all those "you still got it" chants. I'm hoping Sabu is going to be ready too. It's been a while since we tagged, and I told him when I talked to him last time, I'm really concerned already because I always hurt Sabu when I'm in the ring with him. whether he's my partner or I'm wrestling against him, I always hurt him, and I think I always have. And just if I pick him up and like drop him down on the guy to do a leg drop or something, I'm like, oh my god.
That's awesome. Well, look. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was gonna say. So that's my that's one of my main concerns. You know, besides that, I'm planning on straight up fighting those guys, those Mexican brothers.
That's awesome. Hey, we want to thank you, Rob, for doing this interview with us. We're excited to have you on. We love the documentary, and we're going to post that link on our site as well, so we can get people to easily connect to it and watch it. And awesome. And we thank you for everything you've done and everything you've done for wrestling. I mean, we're all big, huge fans from the time you started up to now. So it's exciting to see that you're still doing it. And thanks for everything.
Right on, guys. Thank you. I appreciate you guys. And thanks for helping me get the word out. Make sure everyone knows where they can watch Headstrong. And I'm really glad that you guys enjoyed it and understood everything that I was trying to get across as well.
No doubt.
Absolutely.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you, brother.